The Brad Sessmatt Show, broadcasting live.
Well, welcome on into 2026. I hope you and yours had a great holiday season. Brad Sessmatt with our daily, monthly, I don't know, in the last month. We've been all over the place. Regardless, there is plenty to talk about, plenty on my mind. Opening comments are brought to you by Desert Financial Credit Union. Desert Financial Credit Union, taking care of you, taking care of your business as they have through the years. We thank Jeff Mishi and Desert Financial and their support. We are self-funded. We started this in 2011. Here we are in 2026. Who would have ever thought? Who would have ever thought that your Cardinals could ever lose 14 times in a season, the most since they've come to Arizona? Who had that on their bingo card? And once again, we're left to wonder what direction the Cardinals are going. Well, I can tell you there is no direction, and that is the problem. It seems like every 2 to 3 years, if you look back on Michael's track record with the Cardinals and in the owner's chair, the owner likes to change coaches about every 3 or 4 years. He's already paying two of them right now. So if he fires Jonathan Gannon, there's another one. You just don't see this with organizations. They may have a dip, a reset. Seattle's a prime example. When an organization is run correctly from the top down, we just don't get stuck in ruts. Bad organizations get stuck in ruts. There's no other way to put it. There's no other way to sugarcoat it. When I read, well, it's all about the injuries, it's always something else rather than, you know what, maybe I should look in the mirror. And then fans on social are going to their feeds and saying, maybe it's the owner's problem. Yeah, I really don't know how anybody could have sat through this last season and said anything about the Super Cardinals and in a positive light. I don't care. I really don't care about things that they do off the field versus winning. Because here's the thing. It's expected that when you own a sports franchise, that you are a good steward. That is expected the minute that you sign up. So when I get bombarded with, look at what we're doing in the community to take the focus off of our trash product on the field, yeah, I have a hard time with that. It's called sports washing. There's enough sports washing going on in our industry right now. Media companies that have contracts with teams that are lousy and they just look the other way. But, oh, man, look at this great stuff they're doing in the community. That's supposed to happen. And by the way, the best form of charity is the charity that nobody knows about. So let's just get through the patting ourselves on the back and how awesome and amazing we are. And look at what we did with some students last year. It's fine you did it. But man, when you're living off of that versus look at what the product is that fans are paying for, I really don't get it. I just don't get how people don't see clearly what is going on here. Clearly what's going on. So they gave up 37. You know, the Cardinals, your Cardinals averaged, their team gave up on average in the month of December, 38 points per game. Well, that's because they had all these injuries. Really? I don't know. I saw Buda Baker out there. I saw Calais Campbell out there. I saw Josh Sweat out there. I saw Zaven Collins out there. Well, you know, that's pretty. Every team has injuries. Every team has injuries. Josh Weinfuss, who I really like at ESPN.com, he put up a kind of a rundown, breakdown of where your Cardinals are today and some of the behind the scenes stuff. Full admittance, I'm not there every day. Thank God. I've lived that life for 20 years. It's just not worth it. This is much more worth it when you see how things are being manipulated and presented and PR'd out in a way that's just a joke. That's what it is. Josh wrote how maybe the owner's not going to fire Gannon. Maybe Kyler Murray's back again next year. Hey, who are you going to put on the come see your Cardinals in 2020? They're going to show so much Trey McBride. They're going to show Trey McBride, like, just put up Trey McBride and Michael Wilson. Yeah, Michael Wilson was great this year. They had a couple breakthroughs. Well, if James Conner had stayed healthy, well, if Kyler had stayed healthy, well, if our offense, it's always that. So if you're going to fall back every single stinking year and you're in a division that, I don't know, you guys tell me, the number one seed is Seattle. The 49ers and Rams are in the playoffs. You're looking up. You're like, how do we ever break through in this division? So, I am of the opinion that, sure, Jonathan Gannon could survive. I could even make the case that he should survive because, yeah, they had a lot of injuries this year. The team played hard. Team didn't give up against the Rams. You look at little things like that. To me, final score is not really indicative. But I couldn't see Calais Campbell coming back for another season being as productive. Josh Sweat finds out that when you come to Arizona and you don't get voted to the Pro Bowl and you get mad about it, it's because nobody knows you're out here. It's the same thing with Devin Booker in the NBA, why he's never been a starter in the All-Star game, even though he deserves it. We are an outpost in the world of the sports geosystem, ecosystem. So it's the way it goes. The Seahawks are the number one seed in the NFC. The Broncos, number one seed in the AFC. I would be just fine with the two of them meeting. I kind of am rooting for the Bears. Kind of rooting for the Bears a little bit. Daughter gets married. Guy, you know, his only hangup is he's a huge Bears fan. It's his only hangup. But, you know, once you're part of family, you have to accept that. I'm not, clearly not going to try to say, well, I live here in Arizona, you should root for this team. That's not happening. Thank God the Suns are in town. I thought of the Buddy Ryan quote, "You've got a winner in town" last night. I watched the game against Oklahoma City. It was tremendous. This is a great regular season NBA game. Not a lot of those, in my opinion. Devin was a fall-away three-pointer, and he ends up hitting the big shot. The Suns win over OKC 108-105 at home. Looked like a good crowd. Crowd was excited. Crowd had something to cheer for. When the Suns are good and relevant, this is a Suns town. That's just how it is. We shall see if this continues. One of those benchmark wins that they could say, okay, we beat Sacramento. Okay, everybody beat Sacramento. Okay, we beat Oklahoma City. All right. So let's see where it goes from here. The Fiesta Bowl is in town. The Fiesta Bowl this week is Miami of Florida against Ole Miss. There are going to be plenty of empty seats, and that's okay. People judge bowl games by, oh, look at all those empty seats. Nobody cares. Guys, it's wallpaper for TV networks. You tell me, how many Miami of Florida fans, is Miami of Florida a Rabbits fan base outside of our own Jody Jackson here in town? The answer is no. Ole Miss, they're going to fly all the way out here on less than 7 days advance purchase. And then if they win and go to the championship game, it's a big ask of fans. Fans are being asked in the CFP to just, hey, man, you want to follow your team for 3 weeks? We just want the big cigars. We just want the big cigars to come out here because every week you have to travel. It's 3 weeks in a row, less than 7 day advance purchase. Do the math. It's not pretty. I'm happy Miami of Florida is in it. I'm happy Ole Miss is in it. I don't want Blue Bloods. I think the days of Blue Bloods may be over because now all the cheating that was going on behind the scenes is out in the open. And kids understand, hey, man, I could go to Vanderbilt and get paid the same check or maybe even greater than always going to Alabama or Georgia. There is some good side to this with players getting paid in the transfer portal. As much as I find it laughable to see a kid go to 4 or 5 colleges, and then people defend it. Well, he has every right to do that. I don't know. When he has a tough time at his job, what's he going to do, just up and quit because that's all he's ever known? When you see a kid that transfers through high school time after time after time, and college time after time after time after time, you just wonder when they have a tough day in life if they're going to hang in there. You just wonder. All right. Jordan Hamm caught up with the Arizona State's newest quarterback in terms of video. And then he caught up with somebody who covered him. That would be one of our own from the past. It's always fun to bring back our alums. And then John Wilner, Wilner Hotline, his view of the CFP and much more as we do every Monday on the college football front with Wilner Hotline. I'm Brad Sussmat.
Welcome on into Walking On with Jordan Hamm. We got a lot going on. Transfer portal in full swing. ASU picking up some big targets, including Kentucky quarterback Cutter Bowley. And Sarandon Raboyne is joining us. A former Sports 360 AZ intern, Cronkite star, doing a great job out in Kentucky now. And she's given us some insight here on ASU's newest quarterback. So with Cutter, what just stands out to you about Cutter as a player, as a person, and how he might match up well with Arizona State?
So Cutter, let me break this down for you. So Cutter was not originally the starting quarterback at Kentucky this season. That job was Zach Calzada's. He was a transfer that came in. Kentucky wanted him to start. And then after 2 to 3 weeks, it looked like Calzada wasn't going to do the job. Cutter then got the starting opportunity and he never looked back. He was able to take the job from Calzada as a redshirt freshman. And he has that kind of quality that I have talked about as like the grit, the determination. He loves being on the football field and he loves giving anything that he can for his football team. He grew up in Kentucky. The University of Kentucky was his kind of like dream school to play for. So I think a lot of that had to do with he wanted to take advantage of this opportunity, right? He wanted to play for the Wildcats. So having him transfer was interesting in my mind because, you know, he's kind of going away from his dream school. But I think he has that raw talent that Arizona State and Kenny Dillingham can do a ton with. He has the arm strength that can get you that deep ball. He has some mobility with his legs, able to make plays and scramble for the first down. What the key part of his game that he needs to get developed is he throws way too many interceptions. And it's that kind of decision making in the pocket, when to hold on to the ball, when to get rid of it, when to pass it off to a running back. You know, that kind of decision making is what he needs to kind of iron out. And I think Kenny Dillingham can do that and kind of give him the opportunity. And remember, Jordan, like, he's a redshirt freshman at the end of this year. He has a lot of eligibility left, a lot of growing to do, but he has some true potential and true spark that I think that can make him a starting quarterback for Arizona State.
And when, you know, just reading up on him, you know, Kenny Dillingham recruited him out of high school. Liam Cohen, the now head coach of the Jacksonville Jags, is the one that got him to Kentucky. Tim Couch has been a mentor of him. So how have you seen kind of some of these big name quarterback gurus, if you will? Yeah. I mean, clearly that's a message if they have been fighting over him for multiple years now, and now he's able to pair up with Kenny and head to Tempe.
Yeah, and I think Kentucky football hasn't been in the best place over the last couple of years. You saw that at the end of this season when they fired head coach Mark Stoops. So there was been a lot of turnover and trying to figure out what they had for the future. So Cutter has been getting a lot of opportunities to kind of learn and grow and play in the SEC, play in the SEC on the road, and really talk to some of these quarterback gurus and get coached up, especially because, I mean, we all know the SEC is not an easy place to play. It's not an easy place to play as a freshman. And so to have those kind of people in your corner trusting you with the job and trying to give you that coaching in order to lead an SEC program, I think that it speaks to Cutter as a quarterback and what he has mentally. I know that with as many losses as Kentucky sustained this year, a lot of that was not due to Cutter. Their defense was in shambles. Their offense, they had no receivers for him to really throw to. So there was a lot of things around Kentucky that kind of led to the lack of success, if you will, that wasn't necessarily on the quarterback's fault. Now, I think when you look at that, you want to make sure that your quarterback is mentally strong and is able to kind of lead the team and able to take those hits in stride, if you will. And everything that we had heard from Mark Stoops in talking with Cutter throughout the season when it wasn't going great, it was very much, we got to move on to the next thing. We have to, like, you know, get better, review the film. There was no down in the dumps. It was, I have to get better. I have so much to improve upon. I feel like I'm learning. And he was getting better throughout the season. Like, in his first start in the SEC on the road at South Carolina compared to his last start at home, I think you could see a lot of growth, a lot of confidence being built. And if you can build upon that confidence, it will be really a match made in heaven. I do think, like, if you are an Arizona State fan and you're trying to look at what games he did well at, I think you look at the wins in against Florida and against Auburn. I think that there was some good play from him there. Don't necessarily look at the last couple of games of the season. That was the wheels were coming off the bus a little bit. So I think there are some games that you can look at where you can see how Cutter did and what he was able to do.
Whether a quarterback likes it or not, a lot of times when they are a part of a college program, they're going to be the leader. Yeah. How would you describe Cutter Bowley as a leader? Is he more of a rah-rah guy? Is he a by example guy? What can ASU kind of expect from the person that is Cutter?
So from what I can gather, it doesn't seem like he's the rah-rah in the locker room guy. It seems like he's more like, I'm going to put my body on the line on the field. And so I'm showing you that I'm going to take the hit so you can believe in me. There was this play that he had against Tennessee Tech. So it's, you know, it's a non-conference game late in the season. They're just trying to get another win to get closer to bowl eligibility, right? And he's scrambling up and down the sideline. He's got 20 yards, 25. He's like 5 to 10 yards from the goal line. And there's a defender wanting to stop him from going in. And instead of stepping out, he lowers his shoulder and tries to bully past him. That's the kind of effort that you had late in the season on a Kentucky team that wasn't doing well. And, you know, he could have just stopped and avoided the injury. But instead, he's like, no, I'm going to try to go for the touchdown. I'm going to try to get every single yard that I can. And that is the play that I would identify Cutter as. Like, he's going to put his body on the line in the way to show that he is one of the team. He's taking the hits. It's not like I'm the quarterback, I'm going to get protected. It was very much like, I'm one of you. I want to make a football play. I'm going to do anything I can for this team. And that's what I think ASU fans can expect.
I'm sure something fans will love and head coaches will hate seeing that.
I know Mark Stoops wasn't great about that. He's like, we got to talk to you about that. But he was like, yeah, I probably shouldn't have done that in the grand scheme of things. But I think when you want a football guy, like, you want someone that like has that like fire in you, especially I think when you looked at how the season was going, like, he had that grit. He was making plays and he wasn't giving up and taking it lying down. And I think that speaks more to his character than maybe like, you know, we can iron out the decision-making plays when it comes to the X's and O's, but the character is there, and I think that's exciting.
Totally. We are in a very strange space with the transfer portal. In essence, we could see almost a trade happening where Cutter Bowley heads to ASU. Kentucky now has emerged as a target for Sam Levitt. Was just on a visit there. Looks like he's going to be checking out Texas Tech as well, and maybe a couple of others. But why do you think Kentucky emerged as a potential landing spot for Sam, and how much would that match up well for those two sides?
Yeah, so I think that when you look at what Kentucky has been the last couple of years, where it's like, you know, bottom of the barrel SEC, kind of hovering around that 500 mark, you're like, why would you pick Kentucky? Kentucky is going through a lot of change in itself with this football program. They just hired Will Stein as their new head coach. Will Stein is currently the Oregon offensive coordinator, who is in the middle of a college football playoff run, trying to maybe get to a national championship. He has developed quarterbacks like Dante Moore, Bo Nix, you know, so there is a lot of quarterback development that he has done that maybe Sam is looking at and saying, okay, these players made it to the NFL. It's not that, you know, they are good players and good quarterbacks, but like players that are making that next step. And if he had a good hand in that, then that could be a place for him to go. I know Kentucky is reshaping not only with their head coach, but their entire staff is completely new, except for maybe one or two people. And so there's going to be a lot of changeover. And I think when you look at, as a quarterback who maybe wants to make that jump to the NFL, you want to prove that maybe you can do it on the biggest stage, and that there is no big, like, other big stage than the SEC. And Kentucky has a gauntlet of a schedule next year when they face Alabama, you know, all of these other big SEC. And if you come in with a hot new head coach who is going to try to make this more of a passing offense than Kentucky has been in the past, Kentucky's historically been a defensive minded school with head coach Mark Stoops when he was at the helm. So I think when you look at what Will Stein can maybe do with Kentucky and do with, you know, the opportunity of the stage that they have, I can see why Sam Levitt would want to go there and maybe say, okay, let's do it. I want to show that I can hang with the big boys. Like, there is no better schedule. There is no better place than maybe right here.
Saran and Raboyne, so much great insight on both sides of a very strange quarterback dynamic for Kentucky and
you've heard of wife swap. Why not quarterback swap? New series coming.
Strange new world we're in. Thank you so much, Saran.
Of course.
And we start out 2026 on a very high note. That would be John Wilner. Why not? Why not have John Wilner and Wilner Hotline every week? Of course, on Mondays, we crank it out, and then he cranks out lots of great content over on the website at sports360az.com. Okay, we're down to the final four. And as you sit here today and look at these two games that are coming up, do you see a definitive, Brad, there's no question that this is going to be the national champion?
No, I don't. I mean, I think Indiana should be the favorite, but certainly agreed. I would not be surprised if any of the four teams won. I don't think there is a team that's quite the equivalent of what Ohio State was last year. I mean, to me, entering the semifinals last year, it was clear Ohio State was the best team. It's somewhat clear Indiana's the best team, but I would say it's toss-up. If you're ranking them, it's Indiana, Oregon, Miami, then Ole Miss probably. But, I mean, look at the situation at Ole Miss, right? Who's going to bet against them at this point, given their post-Lane Kiffin rallying, right? It's a lot like some of your viewers might remember, it's a lot like what Michigan did in the NCAA tournament in 1989 after Bill Frieder took the ASU job, got fired. They promoted Steve Fisher. Bo Schembechler said, I want a Michigan man coaching Michigan, right? And with Frieder off to Tempe, they went and won the national title. I don't know that Ole Miss is going to win two more games, but it has that kind of feeling.
Well, John, here's the thing that I look at with these final four, and that is they're all flawed in a certain way. Indiana feels a step higher. Oregon cannot run the football. Just so we're really clear about that. Miami's defensive ends are monsters.
Yes.
Monsters.
Yes.
Like Miami's defense. But, you know, you look at Miami and you say, is there enough there? Everybody makes a big deal out of Carson Beck at quarterback. They're going to play out here. And I don't think this is going to be a full stadium on less than 7 days advance purchase for the fan base. So is there going to be a home field advantage? I don't see that. I think the Indiana-Oregon game is more intriguing. And the one out here, it's not a bad game. It's actually a really good game because the angles with Ole Miss, without Kiffin and them running in Miami, being the U and coming back, we're going to see Michael Irvin on the sideline take his belt off again. I don't know. But it feels like these final four may be the way that it goes in the future. The days of the Blue Bloods are done, John, for the most part.
Yeah, I think so.
When you see what's going on now with the portal and Indiana doing what they did,
yes,
Bama just completely getting boat raced, it never happens.
Never happens. It's a new era, there's no doubt. I mean, it took a couple of years to, I think, for us to get to a couple of years of the portal and NIL and now revenue sharing to get to this point where there is truly, 20, 25 teams that could win the national title as opposed to there being six, right? Maybe it's not 20 or 25, but it's certainly a lot more than it used to be. I don't think it will change. I think it's good for the sport. Part of the reason is the access, right? I mean, going from a 14 playoff to a 12-team playoff, you're just inviting in more schools that could potentially win it, right? If this was still the four-team era, we wouldn't have Ole Miss or Miami or Oregon even, right? It would be Indiana, Georgia, Yeah, I don't even remember the others. Texas Tech, maybe, right? It would have just been the top four teams in the final rankings. So the fact that they've expanded has given more teams a chance. They're probably going to expand it again. We should probably get into that, the January 23rd deadline. But yeah, this is, it's a new era. I feel like that weekend with the upsets by Ole Miss and Miami, it's like a little bit of an NCAA tournament feel, right? Now you got a one seed, and then you got like a five, a six, and a 10, and anybody could win it, and they're all flawed, and that's what we get in the Final Four in March. So I think it's great.
Do you anticipate January 23rd, let's get into that, being one where they say, we're going to go to 16, we're going to go to 24? How far do you think they're going to go? Because there's always going to be a yelling and screaming match of, that's not enough. We're the ones that are getting, we are Wyoming,
yes,
being left out. Well, you should be left out. No offense to Wyoming. We're Washington State. What are we supposed to do?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, the group of five situation is a whole nother issue.
Yes.
But, well, here's what I'd say. I believe that there are three options, but I think only two of them are viable. So they have to notify ESPN by January 23rd if they're going to expand the playoff for next season. So they could stay at 12. They could go to 14, but I don't think there's a lot of support for that. Or they could go to 16. The 2014 proposal by the Big Ten could very well happen, but not for next season. That requires a complete overhaul of the postseason calendar, and they can't do it. They would have to get rid of the conference championship games. They can't do it in time for next fall. Really, the only options are staying at 12 or going to 16. I believe they will go to 16. Mm-hmm. But you might say to yourself, well, that's great, Brad. It's obvious. One should play 16 and two should play 15 and three should play. It's obvious. And there should be two rounds of games on campus. They don't do anything that's obvious. They don't do anything that's simple. They always make it harder. They always protect their territory ahead of the good of the game. They are considering creating a 16-team playoff in which there are buys, even double buys, to reward conference champions. Well, how might they do that, Brad? Well, they could create a first four, kind of like they have in March Madness, where 16 plays 13 and 15 plays 14 on the second week of December. And then the two winners advance. And then you've got the top two overall seeds having buys. They could muck it all up. Do not put anything past the commissioners to muck this thing up. Will they have two rounds on campus? Probably not, because that would force them to disassociate themselves from the bowls, right? You got six major bowls. The only way that works for all of them hosting the playoff, four quarterfinals, two semifinals. If you put the quarterfinal games on campus, four of those six bowls aren't hosting playoff games in any given year. Oh my, that's a problem, right? Because those bowls have been part of college football for many years and decades. There's obstacles. It's like trying to play seven-dimensional chess inside a wormhole. There are no easy answers for the sport. Ideally, I mean, I know I'm on my soapbox here, but I'm going to just go.
Please stay on the soapbox.
Ideally, they move the whole thing up a week, at least a week, to week zero. Everybody starts on week zero. You then can play quarterfinal rounds the second weekend of December that is currently reserved for Army-Navy. You can then move the semifinals. This is the ideal scenario. You move the semifinals up. They're no longer on New Year's Eve, New Year's Day. Oh well. But that will allow you to do what they need to do, and that's play the national championship game in the Rose Bowl on January 1st. That is the best outcome for the sport, partly because it gets the college football postseason out from under the shadow of the NFL playoff, right? That's a huge problem. The NFL playoffs are a huge problem for the sport, and it's going to get worse. Why? Because you've seen what Goodell wants to do, right? They're going to add an 18th game. They're going to play the Super Bowl on the weekend of President's Day. That 18th game will just create a more cluttered January calendar for college football. It's going to get buried. They've got to do something. They got to move it up. They won't ever. We won't ever get to the point where the championship game is January 1st in the Rose Bowl. But maybe we could get to the point where the championship game is January 8th in the Rose Bowl. Right? That would be better. Next year, the championship game is January 25th in Las Vegas. That's insane.
Oh, I love your soapbox.
Well, I mean, it's.
I love your soapbox.
They have created this problem.
Who's they, John? Let me just get to this.
The conferences and the schools.
No, I understand that, but could they be all alleviated by having a commissioner? This is an old topic, but it's what fans have been asking about. Like, Brad, you and John sit around and cackle like old ladies on occasion because there's so much stuff going on that just seems obvious. Why not go to Nick Saban and say, we'll pay you a ton of dough? And my response is conference commissioners, conference presidents of universities don't care as much about sports as we do, in my humble opinion. I've got it going on right here in Tempe.
So true that they don't care as much about sports as we do. But the other truth is that the moment you appoint a commissioner, the SEC and Big Ten and ACC and Big 12 have far less influence than they currently do. Right now, the Big Ten and SEC are running the sport with, you know, some assistance from the ACC and Big 12. A commissioner would immediately put Greg Sankey out of business, Tony Petitti out of business, Jim Phillips, Brett Yormark. You know, they wouldn't lose their jobs, but they'd have a lot less influence than they do now. So I don't think that they want that end game. They want to control it, even if it means they have to be territorial. And even if getting from point A to point B requires you to go to point Z and point X, they prefer this over ceding power to a commissioner. The other piece that would help is if the playoff incorporated other broadcast partners. The fact that it's owned and operated by ESPN to the exclusion of Fox and NBC and CBS also creates a problem because that you have competing motivations there. The NFL does it much better because all those networks are part. They answer to the NFL. They're all in it together. They're cross-promoting. They're working together with logistics. You don't see that in college football.
Yeah. No, that's a good point. I'll let you go off that. We could go for hours.
Hours. Days.
Hours.
Days.
Read about some of the stuff from John, as always, because he has his finger right on the pulse. That's John Wilner, and we're back with more after this timeout.
Thanks, Brad.